Right, said Fred, both of us together, one each end and steady as we go. Tried to shift it, couldn't even lift it, we was getting nowhere, and so we had a cup of tea. And right, said Fred, give a shout for Charlie, up comes Charlie from the floor below. After straining, heaving and complaining, we was getting nowhere, and so we had a cup of tea. And Charlie had a think, and he thought we ought to take off all the handles and the things what held the candles. But it did no good, well, I never thought it would. All right, said Fred, have to take the feet off to get them feet off, wouldn't take a mo. Took its feet off, even took the seat off, should have got us somewhere, but no. So Fred said, let's have another cup of tea, and we said, righto. All right, said Fred, have to take the door off, need more space to shift the so-and-so. Had bad twinges, taking off the inches, and it got us nowhere, and so we had a cup of tea. And right, said Fred, have to take the wall down, that there wall is gonna have to go. Took the wall down, even with it all down, we was getting nowhere, and so we had a cup of tea. And Charlie had a think, and he said, look, Fred, I've got a sort of feeling, if we remove the ceiling with a rope or two, we could drop the bladder through. All right, said Fred, climbing up a ladder with his crowbar, gave a mighty blow. Was he in trouble? Half a ton of rubble landed on the top of his dome. So Charlie and me had another cup of tea, and then we went home. I said to Charlie, we'll just have to leave it standing on the landing, that's all. You see, the trouble with Fred is he's too hasty. Now, you never get nowhere if you're too hasty.
Bernard Cribbins there, and right, Sir Fred, it's TRE, and we're speaking to James Hogg now on his book, Bernard Who? 75 Years of Doing Just About Everything. Good afternoon, James. Great to have you back on again.
Thank you very much. Good to speak to you.
Great to hear that song again. Of course, it's just, it's timeless in many ways, isn't it? My kids love listening to that song.
It is. So do mine. I've got a 9-year-old, and it is officially his favourite song. Howling the Ground, he's not so keen on, says it's a bit dull, but yeah, right, said Fred, he knows all the words.
Yeah, brilliant, yeah. And it is, and also, I mean, we'll talk about this in a moment, but kids will know Bernard Cribbins anyway, but we'll get onto that in a few moments' time, because he's still very popular with children. Now, you actually co-authored the book with Bernard, is that right? Am I right in saying
yeah,
that?
Yeah, they call it a collaboration. Yeah. So it's not really ghosting, it's a collaboration. So he'll get somebody who is able to get his voice on a page, yeah, and we sort of work together. So I sat in his house for a while, we chatted away about everything, and he's a lovely chap, is Bernard, as you'd imagine. And yeah. But he was very, you know, he's old school. So I'd say to him, right then, we're going to talk about the Wombles. And he'd say, oh, it's just a job.
Yeah.
I say, no, Bernard, we're going to need slightly more than that. So it's my job to tease the stories out and then help him write them. So, but well, I mean, you know, as jobs go, it's not bad.
I got to say, yeah, because I know you've written about a lot of comedians, and I know you're going to be on our Christmas show talking about Ernie Wise. You know, to sit there with the great Bernard Cribbins and just sit there and almost listen to him and write stuff down must have been a dream job.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not. I'm not trying to big my part up, but it's not easy because you have to get there. You know, Bernard's got quite a distinctive voice, and I always write. We wanted to do it in a very conversational way. We wanted it to be sort of Jack and Ori on the page.
Yeah.
You felt like Bernard was sitting there in front of you. So that was very, very important. So we worked on that. I've done a couple of books with Brian Blessed in the same guise. And Brian writes books, but Brian writes in a very flowery way, very romantic way.
Yeah.
So I had to try and recreate Brian's personality on a page. You see, that's the skill, if you can call it that.
That's the magic.
But, once you get the voice, then you're away.
Yeah.
And it's just story after story after story. And you know, he's fantastic. For him, he's 90 in about a month and a half. He's astonishing.
Now, it must help if you're a fan of them as well.
I would never. I could never. It wouldn't be right if I wrote a book with somebody I had no interest in, because you can't. You have to be. You know, you have to be enthusiastic about the project.
Yeah.
So I'm speaking to Rudolph Walker later on. Obviously, very very popular black actor who's in EastEnders, etc., etc. And he's a really, really good actor. He's one of my favourites. So, you know, I always go for people. I'm a fan of. That's the first rule.
Do you ever get starstruck? You know, first time you meet maybe Bernard Cribbins, because you know, he's been part of our lives for years.
Yeah, I was terrified. Not in a bad way. Just the fact that I was meeting Bernard Cribbins, and he was lovely. His wife's absolutely gorgeous, and we just sat there, and it was like my own private jackanory for days on end. He has this big high chair that he sat in. And he said, right then, what should we talk about now? And I said, we're going to talk about I'm All Right, Jack. I'm All Right, Jack. Sorry, he wasn't even in that. Two-way stretch. Or Wrong Arm of the Law, something like that. And away he went. And I would have to try, you know, then I go away and sort of, you know, rewrite it and put, you know, more in his voice, because you have little quirk, little words that they use, et cetera, et cetera. So you build a story, really.
And they say not to meet your heroes. I mean, I love Any Fools and Horses, and I'm not I'd love to meet David Jason, but I just don't know what he's I assume he's a nice guy, but you just, you know, so that's always there in the background, I should imagine, for you.
It is. When I met Brian Blessed for the first time, my agent, literary agent, and everybody I knew who'd heard about him said, oh, it's going to be a nightmare. He can be really difficult, this and the other. By the time I got there, I was terrified. You know, this big bull of a man. And when I knocked on his door, I promise you, I was quivering. And there was this voice who just said, is that James? Is that James? Let's write a book. And he came, he opened the door, pulled me inside. You know, do you want a cup of tea? He puts two tea bags in. If you want a cup of tea, you have two tea bags. You have to have sugar.
Yeah.
You can't not have sugar in tea. It's just not done.
Yeah.
And in one book, I had 3 weeks in his hut at the back of his garden of him sort of screaming at me about stories about Peter O'Toole and this, that, and the other. But I was terrified. But Bernard, not so much. But Bernard's a formidable man. He was in the paratroopers back in 1947. You know, he was over in Palestine when he was just 18 years old. And, you know, he does not suffer fools. Let's just put it that way.
I mean, he comes across as a nice person, doesn't he? Likeable and, I suppose, more so as he's got older, kind of a lovely old man in many ways. But, you know, great storyteller and, you know, and he seems to be relatable.
Yeah, and he just seems to have renaissance after renaissance. Like he was in Doctor Who, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And he's gone on to become, you know, one of the most popular Doctor Who companions, even though he'd already done it with Peter Cushing in the 60s. And then he does Old Jack's Boat, which is sold to hundreds of countries around the world. Honestly, I'm sitting next to him in his house when he's telling me these stories. He's got a pile of photographs, postcards for Old Jack's Boat that he has to sign, about 3 feet high, hundreds of them, and they're sent all over the world. But he's as popular now, believe it or not, globally, more popular than he's ever been.
Well, because I mean, my kids will sit and watch CBeebies, and you know, and he's on the telly there. But, you know, it's just, and again, you know, that kind of jackanory side of things comes out, and he's a great storyteller. And it's a lovely program.
Yeah, he is the master storyteller. And he told me, he said that the first day he did Jackanory in, what was it, 67 or something like that, he holds the record for recording the most amount of shows, 115 shows or whatever. He said the first thing he did was just look into the camera and imagine that there's one child sitting there attentively waiting for him to tell them a story. And that's how he recorded every episode. And it was the same with Old Jack's Boat. That's what he does. He just, you know, imagines there's one child sitting there and, you know, desperately waiting for him to start talking. And he said that's what starts him off.
Now, you mentioned that really is the key. I've heard people say that a lot before. Talking about him being a paratrooper there, being in Palestine, being shot at, and yet he comes back and at some point he's approached by George Martin, of all people, isn't he? And this song comes about.
Yeah, George Martin was the A&R man for Parlophone, and he'd also produced a lot of novelty records with Spike Milligan and Charlie Drake and all sorts of people. I think he did My Boomerang Won't Come Back. And Bernard was in a review written by all sorts of people, Barry Cryer, Lionel Bart, and one of the songs George Martin liked and said, let's record it. So to cut a long story short, that particular song was called Folk Song. Mm. It sold 25,000 copies, didn't even make the top 40. In those days, these days you'd be at number one for weeks. But Parlophone saw something, and they got Ted Dix and Miles Rudge, the writers, to knock up a couple of songs. He was in Studio 3, Abbey Road, with George Martin, probably about 6 months before he started working with the Beatles for the first time in Studio 3, Abbey Road. And they recorded about 30 songs together, all in all. Yeah. And there was an album, you know, two top 10 singles, an album. But because he was also acting, he didn't do any, there were no appearances on Top of the Pops, you know, or whatever. There was no promotional stuff. And he never sang, the only time he ever sang any of the songs live, he did Hole in the Ground at George Martin's memorial service.
Oh,
that
right,
was it.
Wow. Yeah, because you never see any videos on YouTube of him singing live, do you? I've looked him up a few times. And then, of course, I mean, he's involved with so many different things, but for time purposes, of course, we've got to mention the Railway Children in 1970, I suppose at the time they wouldn't have known that this was going to be the big British film, one of the greatest British films of all time.
No, it was video that did that. It really was. It kind of, they were nominated for a few BAFTAs, which was wonderful. Yeah. But then it kind of, as all films did back then, it disappeared, and it was shown on television occasionally. And then video came along, and it became sort of a Renaissance movie, and everybody just fell completely in love with it. And it is probably, it must be one of, if not the most popular family film. Of all time. It's a real treasure.
And these films never go away, really, because I think the older they get, the more magical they become in some ways. I don't know, the nostalgia of it all. I mean, Christmas time coming up, Wonderful Life will be on, I think sometimes with all that we have, all the technology, the green screens and all this, Avengers and all stuff like that, there's something about these old movies that just, they won't go away. They've got a charm about them, and they always will.
Yeah, well, I mean, why do you think Gold, the station Gold, are showing Only Fools and Horses back to back constantly, you know, for about 7 or 8 hours every day, 7 days a week?
Yeah.
There's a very good reason for that. It's because I think, you know, and I can watch Only Fools on a loop. I can watch The Railway Children on a loop, because it's like a good painting. Every time, you know, you chuckle at the same things, but you notice something else. There's little nuances. There are certain things you notice, and it's they are the gifts that keep on giving.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, where does he go now? I mean, as I say, he's about to turn 90. He's still doing these TV programs for the kids.
Have you heard about the new Dad's Army?
I have, yeah. And I'm not sure if I'm going to like this or not, but carry on anyway.
Yeah, well, they've got some lost episodes that were never made.
Yeah.
And they are looking at making them with a new cast, not so much like the film, which didn't really work. I think they're going to go less film star and more, you know, British sort of stalwart. And I read on Twitter the other day that he was to play Private Godfrey. And I rang him up and I said, what's going on? And he said, I have absolutely no idea. But he rang his agent and he's up for doing it. So I think it has been mooted. There's been no offer. But that's what he's going to be. He's going to be doing that early next year.
Oh, brilliant. It
could be interesting.
So it doesn't look like Bernard Cribbins is likely to retire anytime soon.
No chance, apart from a bit of a stoop, because he when he was in the Powers, he had a bit of a back injury, which has got worse. He does everything. He shoots. He's got an air rifle in his front room, and he takes pot shots at squirrels and then feeds them to the foxes if he's not working. The problem Bernard has at his age is quite difficult to insure. I had this conversation with Robert Hardy, and one of the reasons he had to leave the Harry Potter series was because they just couldn't insure him.
Wow.
But he still gets a bit of work. The book has been a bit of a bit of fun, because obviously that's something that it makes no difference. You don't need insuring. You just need to speak to me for a few weeks. But he's in fantastic form. He really is. He's done quite a few interviews. He can't do signings, you know, public signings, because it just knackers him out.
Yeah.
But no, I think it seems to be doing very, very well, the book. So who knows, we may even do another.
Oh, lovely. Well, yeah, that'd be great. And what about David Jason? Come on, what do you reckon? Would he be up for doing the book with you?
Not with me. He's already done two.
Yeah, he's done loads of autobiographies, hasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately not with me. But it's one of those things. It's, you can't... I'm not sure whether I'd want to do David Jason, to tell the truth.
Yeah.
I have spoken to Nicholas Lyndhurst's agent a couple of times, and he's the one, because I'm a big fan of Butterflies.
Yeah.
I think he's more interesting as a character, and I think he's the better actor. If I'm being, a lot of people would be sort of throwing things at the radio, but I'm a big fan of. I think Nicholas Lyndhurst is a really clever actor,
yeah.
Really good actor.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, let's watch this space, because you never know who you're going to be up to speaking to next, so it's always interesting. And James, no doubt you'll be back on with us soon, but the book is called Bernard Who, 75 Years of Doing Just About Everything, and it's by James Hogg. It's available on our website if you want to get
it's by Bernard Cribbins.
Bernard Cribbins. Yes, of course, by Bernard Cribbins.
Yeah.
With a little bit of help from his friend.
That's right, exactly.
And the book is available at tre.radio. The website tre.radio. Click on our bookshop banner there, and you can order yourself a copy of the book in time for Christmas. Lovely, thank you very much, James. And you'll be back on tre over Christmas as well, talking about Ernie Wise.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, lovely. Thank you very much, James.
Take care. All the best.
Bye bye now.
Bye bye. Bye bye.